Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Hello, I'm Ryan Dawes. Welcome to an Indiana State Senate District 40 candidate forum, produced in partnership with Community Access Television Services and Community Radio WFHB. Now, this is part of a longer series of forums, of candidate forums, produced by Interchange's production crew, our long-form interview program on WFHB. I have in the studios with me Democrat Mark Stoops and Republican Reed Dels, both vying for the District 40 State Senate seat. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. So, first off, what I'd like to start with is briefly introduce yourselves and talk about how your experience relates to the 40th District of State Senate, as well as what you think you could offer if elected.
Absolutely.
Start with you, Reed.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity. Well, Reed Dels, and fifth generation Hoosier. Born and raised here in Monroe County, and attended Edgewood High School and graduate from Indiana University here in Bloomington through the School of SPIA. Presently a diabetes care specialist, and have two beautiful daughters and a wife, Shannon. We've been married 10 years, so I look forward here to the discussion. I, from graduation till present at IU, until present, I've had the opportunity to work for the city, locally, while in college, and then interned for the 105th Congress in Washington, D.C. at a federal level, and also ran for the State House, the 46th House seat in 2006. And so that gives me, most importantly, been working in the private sector. So I think that experience combined gives me a unique perspective here as we look forward to this particular race and the challenges and opportunities that are at hand in the new Senate District 40. As you know, it was redrawn in the 2010, per the 2010 census. And so as we look ahead to the election and the next General Assembly, some priorities would be first and foremost continuing our fiscal record at the state and ensuring that we balance the budget and keeping our AAA credit score with some change in the bank, right? Pertaining to Senate District 40, really want to be an advocate and partner with Commerce to reach across both sides of the aisle and work to restore some growth and good-paying jobs to Monroe County. Being born and raised here, I remember back in the day, with RCA and Thompson, and when GE was at its height, and Otis, and of course times change, right? But why can't we? I just saw in Northeastern Indiana, I believe 5-Hour Energy is just announcing that they're going to build a couple hundred million dollar facility, right, and bring some good paying jobs. So that's opportunities that should be landing right here in Monroe County. And in the last decade, plus or minus, that's jobs have been unfortunately leaving. So I look to be an advocate and bring some and restore some jobs here, good paying wages here to folks in Monroe and Bloomington.
Next to you, Mark.
All right, my name's Mark Stoops. If we'll go into the Hoosier pedigree, I've my family on both sides settled in Indiana before it was a state. And actually, my family also has been in Bloomington and Monroe County for 100 years. And I feel that gives me that Hoosier perspective. I was on the Monroe County Council and a past president of the County Council for 8 years. I'm current president of the Monroe County Board of Commissioners. And I think that local government experience is going to be very important in the state Senate. One is because I know local issues. I've worked with many local organizations, and I also understand the tax structure and how local government is funded, so many of the services that everybody enjoys here locally. I feel that's going to be important, especially considering about half the bills that come before the state legislature are related to local government issues specifically. And only, a fraction of the state legislatures have any local government experience. So probably only 20 to 30% of the state legislatures have any real knowledge of how local government works or how school corporations work. So that's going to make a big difference. And I think we need that voice of experience at the state legislature. Vice Simpson has always been there for us, and she had a very thorough working knowledge of both state and local governments. And that's been a big benefit to all of us locally. And hopefully we'll see her as a lieutenant governor, and she'll be able to carry that on. There are many issues that I'd like to see dealt with at the state level. And issues that are coming up that I think are very serious and probably taking us in the wrong direction. One of those is the attempt to privatize our public school system. So the Republicans in the state legislature and the Republican state school superintendent have been following this national model. They call it school reform, but basically it means we're setting our schools up to be able to be taken over by what they call takeover academies, but really it's private corporations. And this was a multi-step process over a couple of years, and we're getting to the point now where many of our local schools are going to be in danger of takeover as early as next year. The other issue I want to deal with is health insurance. Many Hoosiers are uninsured. Many Hoosiers have had to file for bankruptcy just because of medical bills, and I don't think that's right. We have the option coming up in the next session to start working towards Medicaid expansion from the federal government. Many Republicans have said that they will not accept a Medicaid expansion in Indiana. But what that means for Indiana is that there are currently we only provide Medicaid to 28% of poverty level. So that's health care coverage to people at 28% of poverty level. That means everyone from 29% of poverty level to 100% doesn't get any health care coverage at all. And most of that original 28% is children with disabilities and seniors. There are people who really need this. Medicaid expansion would allow us to give health care coverage up to 138% of poverty level. So that's 32,000, say a salary of 32,000 for a family of four would then be able to get health care coverage. Another issue is that over the last two sessions, when there has been a Republican majority in the state legislature, even though we're in a recession, there have been no jobs bill. That's 2 years without a jobs bill. All the governor has come up with is to cut the corporate tax rate, and also to enact what they call a right to work legislation, which basically is a union busting attempt to take funding away from unions take away the right of employees to organize. And they say this is going to attract business, but if we look at nationwide, if we look at states with the lowest corporate tax rate and we look at states with right to work legislation, they're always at or near bottom of the states that have been able to attract businesses and also have the lowest salary levels. So this is kind of race to the bottom type of economic development strategy.
Now, I think that the economy will certainly be on the minds of a lot of voters, and that will determine many voters' minds as they make up their mind at the polls. Now, what I'd like to know, that seems to be one thing that you may have in common, as you both obviously want more jobs in this area. You're talking about jobs being brought specifically to the 40th District. I'm wondering, what are some ideas you have for that? What do you think right to work has to do with bringing those jobs to the state and to District 40, if you're even able to get that specific and get them to the 40th district, and then I'll wait for a response for you.
Thank you, Ryan. As Mark, I think, pointed out, the 32,000 number for poverty. One thing I am, in particular in funding and coverage for Hoosiers and healthcare, one thing I'm really concerned about, again, Ryan, to your question, is what's going on here in Monroe County and Bloomington and Senate District 40. And I think we're not far off. If we maybe look 3 to 5 years, we've had a lot of industry leave. We have such terrific resources with IU and Ivy Tech and Crane, sort of an information corridor, if you will, technology. But specifically what I'm concerned about is some data came out recently looking at median family income, and it compared 555 cities in the United States, and it was looking in particular, and this was from 2011, just released. And of the 555 cities, these cities had populations of 65,000 individuals or more. And it ranked Bloomington. And Bloomington ranked last in the state of Indiana, below below Gary, below Lafayette, below Muncie. And what was really alarming is from a median family income, Bloomington ranked 552nd. Out of 555 cities in the country, so what does that say specific to Bloomington right now, and what families are faced with?
And what can the state senate do about it?
Well, the state senate and government in general, it's not so much what they can do; it's how they can partner. I think you mentioned right to work, and Mark mentioned right to work. It's important to, whether you are for it or you're against the issue, it is now standing, it's passed, right? So what we have to work with right now. Looking at economics and recruitment, I think already 57 companies have shown interest in coming since the legislation was passed. Of those, 20 have committed, right? 20 companies, which will bring over a couple thousand jobs already, with a wage of over $24 an hour. So that needs to happen right here in Monroe County and Bloomington. We need to be, to your point in question about what we can do as a senator here for 40 and representing this area, and that's partnering with commerce and advocates to garner some of the interest here in Monroe County. Why can't Monroe, land a couple hundred million dollar manufacturing facility like Terre Haute has recently? We have the means and the educated folks to staff those companies. Now, if you look at, we talked about sort of some of the trends here in the state in recent, right? I think if you look at the first quarter of 2012, Indiana ranked 6th nationally in jobs, in bringing new jobs. And additionally, I think if you just look, that was through the first half. If you look just through the first quarter, I believe that number was up 2nd nationally. With over 15,000 jobs created in the first quarter of 2012. If you compare it to our neighboring states, you combine the neighboring states, that's equal to or more than all of our states, our neighboring states, and the jobs that they've created. So, we can argue whether right to work is good, bad, otherwise. It's here. How do we use the resources that we have right now, in particular with IU and Crane, and partnering with industry like Cook and Baxter to bring more jobs and grow the economy here in Bloomington and hopefully increase that family income so that it's something that I know my girls will want to stay, hopefully go to IU maybe and consider it one day and return back here and into a thriving community.
So Mark, Reed is of the belief that right to work is set in stone at least for the next few years. Do you agree with that? And also, what impact do you think right to work is having on what manufacturing jobs, or any jobs for that matter, are brought to the state?
Well, this is what we knew this before right to work was passed, and that was any state with right to work legislation sees their salary and wage level decrease. And also, it's nice to hear that Reed will consider repealing right to work if it comes to that. It was right to work was passed in the 50s and repealed in the 60s in Indiana.
Would you consider repealing it?
Well, I'm gonna, as a representative of the community, you have to consider all you know proposals. Mm. So.
So the other thing is the poverty level, and you can't argue that there's poverty level in Monroe County. There certainly is. There is all across the state. But also, as we know, we have a large student population with Indiana University, and that drives our poverty numbers. So the numbers that Reed has given are not adjusted for any type of student population. And really, I think we've done a good job locally in Monroe County of providing services for our population and also for attracting jobs. I've been in local government since 1998. I'm proud of the fact that our policies locally have made us one of the top locations in the country, and I'm talking about in the top 10, top 15, top 3 for business attraction and expansion, also for ease of doing business, and that's because in Monroe County we focus on what we know business wants from local government. So they first of all, they want a highly trained workforce, and we have a lot of capacity and infrastructure for training our workforce. We have one of the most highly rated research institutions in the world with Indiana University. We have Ivy Tech, which is also a very well respected institution across the country. Monroe County has been involved with Ivy Tech and Indiana University and local corporations. We created the Life Sciences Center, and that actually trains kids coming out of high school. It retrains people that have lost their jobs in other manufacturing sectors into new technologies, new types of assembly line, new types of techniques that local corporations are looking for in employees.
So how do you think this could translate beyond the 40th district to the rest of the state? You point to, or you talk about policies that have helped the county grow. What are some of these policies that translate to the state senate level?
Well, we look at the same thing. We have to focus on workforce development. And there's a short-term and long-term strategy. Short-term, we need to make sure that small business has the ability to for entrepreneurs to create new small businesses, and also for existing small businesses to grow and expand. With the recession, we've hit a tight credit market. And one thing that's shown to work very well with helping small businesses is to create a microloan program. And that's a very much targeted small loans that help small businesses either take on new markets or expand. And small business has really been the driving force for employment in the last 20 years. So all job growth has really come from small business in the last two decades. And it makes sense that we continue to focus on helping small businesses. But also workforce development, we need to make sure that our public school system is well funded. And that's another thing that corporations tell us when they're looking for places to locate. Because they're bringing in management, they also want to make sure their employees are happy, and they will almost always locate in areas that have a very good school system. Indiana gutting school funding is really taking the wrong approach to attracting business. So Mitch Daniels pushed through a lower corporate tax. And as I said before, there's no correlation between a lower corporate tax rate and business attraction to the state. And to do that, he gutted public school funding. So if you're going to take both of those together and you look at some return on investment or cost benefit, it made more sense to continue to fund public education and leave the corporate tax rate where it was, because that wasn't the issue. That wasn't keeping any businesses from locating in Indiana.
What are your thoughts on the way in which the corporate tax rate can not only, you know, attract jobs, but then also talk a little bit about how that pertains specifically to education? As Mark says, he sees the state, especially if Tony Bennett stays as superintendent, he sees the increasing trend of the privatization of our state education system. Mm-hmm. What is your opinion of that? Do you think we're headed in that direction? And if so, do you think that that's a good thing?
Well, just taking off on small business, and absolutely, you know, my parents, geez, seems like they always worked a full-time job and had a small business growing up. So I just recently received the National Federation of Independent Business endorsement, and so that is really the champion of small business. So Ryan, just talking a little bit about experience, I think it's important. Mark certainly brings a lot of experience to the table, having served here in different roles in county government. I think we need to talk about the right kind of experience. Fact of the matter is, I've been earning a living and supporting my family. And so I think that gives the best perspective one can take, and hopefully a constituency can have, and a representative here, hopefully, as we look forward for Senate District 40. And I would, if opportunity permits, I'd just like a little clarification on the national business ranking that you referenced, Mark. I may have missed your source, but I was referring to census data from 2011, and you're right. They didn't power it in any way. I mean, they looked at 555 cities that had populations of 65,000 or more. So, of course, a lot of university communities and towns and cities are going to fall into that 555, as did here in Indiana, Purdue and Ball State, right? So I just want to, for the record, clarify that, yes, the students are going to bring down, young people are going to bring down, you know, numbers, if you will, but it's not biased at all. And we still ranked last in Indiana. As it pertains to education, Ryan, a lot of folks may not know that education in the general fund, or the budget that's passed every 2 years with the Indiana General Assembly, education is the single largest component of our state budget. I think it's over, maybe approaching $6.5 billion, and that funding is set to increase as we move forward.
Do you think that should be the largest budgetary priority?
Absolutely. I mean, our young people, my girls, you know, Amory's 3 and Ashlyn's 5, and as we talk about how we get jobs here in this community, ultimately it's through, you know, it all starts with our youth and how we educate our children to hopefully, you know, go to IU or go to Ivy Tech and locate back here in the community and bring their individual skills to make an impact here for our community and for the state. I want to point out there's been some reference to privatization of education here in Indiana. And yes, the last General Assembly did pass, and it's been implemented subsequently, legislation specific to vouchers and school vouchers. But if we look at all the thousands and thousands of kids and children that are educated in the state of Indiana, this roughly, I think, last year constituted around 4,000. Maybe less than 4,000 students. And when given the opportunity, as we look forward to this, I think this year, recent statistics show that indeed more families and parents, mothers, fathers have wanted to sign up and expand. So I think we're looking at some growth of that program. And this, again, this is about giving parents, you know, mothers, fathers, or single family homes that may, you know, be facing, it's already, you know, just crazy and insane right now in our country, what we're facing, fiscally and economic wise and jobs. But, you know, if these kids are from a single parent home, you know, moms are doing the best they can, and they want, I want, I think everyone here wants our children to succeed and do well. And that's just giving that mother the opportunity to you know, if they think that the school of their child's underperforming, you know, maybe there's one that's, you know, a half mile in an inner city or a few blocks away, and they try that. So, but again, I just for the numbers perspective, it's around 4,000 people, or not people, I should say children, I think, that are currently enrolled as we look forward to this year. I don't know if that does that help at all.
Well, sure. I mean, really, the caps come off this year on vouchers, so that program can actually grow as far as legislative approval up to $450 million of money that's being drained from the public school system. And these private school systems or private schools don't have to meet the same criteria as public schools. So now the legislature is. As I said, they've taken a multi-step process. First, they took over funding for public schools from the local citizens. Then they cut funding by $475 million over 2 years. And that's what that's done is caused a lot of school corporations to fire teachers and increase class sizes. Meanwhile, the voucher system is taking money away from public schools, giving it to private schools who don't have to meet the same criteria. So public schools need to take everybody, because everybody constitutionally has the right to a free education. And I think that's one of the great American institutions. And it's really I think that our public education system gets the credit for what America has become. Now this attempt to first create the voucher system that drains money from public schools and also, do you know that if you go to a private school, according to the state legislature, you can write off your books and computers and any other school supplies you need? That's not the same for people who send their kids to public schools and have to pay for books. But the next step is an assessment system that grades our schools from an A to an F on a curve. That means a third of schools, no matter if they're doing well or not, are automatically going to fail. The language is that the state can then sell off that public school to a private corporation. And these assessment systems have been done, and the state school superintendent, Tony Bennett, is holding on to the results until after the election. And that's because it's going to reveal that there are going to be a lot of communities whose schools are considered failing, even if they think they're doing fine. And those schools will be subject to takeover by private corporations. That means there will be no oversight by school boards. And that means there will be no way to get that school back by the public. So it is very much an attempt to privatize our public school system. And what's the reason? The reason is the size of the amount of funding for public schools. So Reed says it's a big chunk of the budget. It's about half the budget. And so just like the prison system and why prisons became privatized in the 70s and 80s and why we have so many prisoners now, it's the same thing. They see an opportunity there to get access to public funds, private corporations, and they're taking it with the help of the Republican majority in Indiana legislature and the governor.
Reed, I'd like to hear your response.
Well, Mark mentioned with the privatization, you know, control, or excuse me, a choice, and in America specifically. And yeah, America's all about choice. And taking away, you mentioned taking away local control, it absolutely, again, there's pros and cons, but it absolutely doesn't take away local control. It gives parents, mothers and fathers, the ability to use what we're paying collectively, all of us, as tax dollars that go into the education funding, right? The opportunity to have a choice in their their child's education.
So are you saying if a private religious school then will have to follow the same criteria as a public school and take kids no matter what their abilities, or if they have disabilities, or if they have a different religious viewpoint or background?
I want to point out, Mark, you mentioned the grading there's no accountability, if you will, for these private schools.
That's correct.
That's not true.
It is true.
They're graded annually, and if they don't meet the bar, and again, right now, we're talking about 4,000 kids, and the program is growing. Parents like it. There's a system set in place that the school is graded, if you will, and there's a standard, and if it doesn't meet that bar, then it's ultimately public dollars for public education.
So I guess what you're saying, though, is you will support standards for private schools that require those schools, religious or not, to take any student that applies, regardless of disabilities or level of learning. Because the issue is that private schools get to pick the cream of the crop. And if you may be a single mother and you may have kids that you want to send to a school down the road, there's no guarantee, unless that child is a performer, that private school will accept them, because that'll take down their level if they are assessed. Public school does not have that option.
Well, I mean, the goal is to get children to the cream of the crop. A lot of these kids are in the inner city, and so no, they don't start out cream of the crop. But this is what our goal of education our children is, hopefully, and will always be, and that is providing the best education. And Mark, I have to say also, locally here, we're faced, Ryan, with some very unique circumstances as it pertains to education. And if you look around the state, and we're touching on different topics here about funding and education. In Monroe County, education and funding is only going to be more of a concern as we move forward. Mark, you passed and led the Comprehensive Growth Plan.
That's right.
The growth plan, for the record, let's just say that state funding is for schools is based on a per student headcount. Well, if we can't build neighborhoods,
you're talking about the land use plan
and grow. If we can't grow as a community, you take a community like Ellettsville, who's starting to thrive and do well, and you reduce or cut the ability to develop new homes in these rural areas. What's the incentive for a student that graduates at IU or Ivy Tech staying here, and in turn enrolling their children into the county, and in that case it would be Richland Bean Blossom, into the school corporation, because funding is based on per student headcounts per school corporation. So MCCSC, Richland Bean Blossom. So if we can't grow, and as some expect, our population could be in jeopardy of declining over the next coming years and decade, we're going to lose education funding that would otherwise go to our children here in Monroe County, my girls, your children, to other counties and cities and neighboring. And so I hope we have time to talk about how this land use plan really stifles business growth, but also and personal freedom, but also spills way over into potentially education and how our children are going to be educated in schools funding.
Before you respond to that, Mark, Reed, I'd like to know why you think this is, because this is obviously a very important issue on the county level, but within the realm of state senate, how do you think it relates to state senate in that way?
Well, as I think we and I touched on hopefully earlier, as state senator for District 40, you have to be a steward, an advocate. That's what I want to be here, for those of folks in Monroe and Bloomington. And so how can any representative or elected official advocate business and jobs and development into this community if you contact a company who's maybe willing to relocate or wanting to relocate, and they look at the land use plans and the ability for their employees to build homes or to settle in and thrive and have their dreams. It makes it very, very difficult for us to land infrastructure, which are badly needed jobs and companies. It's happening all over the state of Indiana. Why can't it happen here? Well, let's look at the climate that our local government officials have created.
But can a state senator impact something like a comprehensive land use plan?
What I've proposed and I've laid out is, I think through the Herald Times, we've had opportunity to answer some candidate questions in different forms, is I want to immediately, upon assuming office and representation, to work with the Senate Local Government Subcommittee and review the land zoning law in the state of Indiana. And I want to compare that. And I would never want to take local control away from the grassroots, if you will. But what's important to note in our democracy, and it's a republic, is that there has to be checks and balance. For a long, long time, there hasn't been any balance here in Monroe County and Bloomington by the Democrats being one party being in control. So as a state senator, absolutely, I'm going to take that opportunity for this community and all those that are concerned to compare state law. And if there needs to be a check or a balance to offset hopefully render this plan moot, I'm going to pursue it.
There are so many issues to address here, and underlying is just a complete basic lack of understanding of how local government is funded and how schools are funded. But let me start
by talking about how the land use plan relates to or doesn't relate to local education funding.
Okay, we'll start with that. First of all, the problem we've had in Bloomington, Monroe County, and this is a problem across the state, is that urban sprawl takes over rural areas. So we can have a school that bonds and builds an expensive new school, say a primary middle school, out in the rural areas. Suddenly, local government turns around and approves a big subdivision. Suddenly, you have 100 new students that are supposed to go into a school, and you have a school that's over capacity. It's built for one set of capacity. So what, are you going to add 2-3 new classrooms to that school? It's not just a matter of this per pupil funding. It's a matter of how much is the school system going to have to bond to create new facilities. That's something that a developer doesn't pay for. That's something that taxpayers pay for. And I'm very proud of our comprehensive plan. It actually focuses new development, high density development, near our urban core, so where we already have infrastructure to serve that high density development. And it preserves agricultural land, it preserves rural land, forest, and environmentally sensitive land. And we have a lot of that in Monroe County. We can't develop like Greenwood. I know Reed Dallas and the other Republicans that are running for county council and county commissioner feel like Monroe County should be the new Greenwood. We don't want to be Greenwood. And when we've done surveys by Monroe County residents, Bloomington residents, they want to preserve the rural character of Monroe County, and that's what this plan does. But it's not just a philosophy of environmental protection and preserving agricultural land. There's also a tax component to it, because the way our tax system is set up, and this is legislation passed by the state legislature, we now have tax caps. So if we allowed high-density development in the rural areas, there would be no new money received by local government to pay for that new infrastructure. It does not work that way.
That's not correct.
It is completely correct. Any new tax revenue basically is divided into the assessed value. So the best thing you could say is that taxes would be lowered in the county. Mm-hmm. That's the most that would happen. Local government does not get more money to service those big subdivisions that would start blooming all around the county.
I respectfully disagree.
So, you can disagree, but it would just show that you don't understand how the local tax system works.
It's very clear. I can spell it out, literally.
So the other So that's part of it. And that's the reason Ellettsville has been growing. Monroe County has, out of 92 counties, Monroe County's tax rate is 70th. And we are the 11th largest county. That shows solid stewardship by Monroe County officials and Bloomington officials. And the same as we mentioned before, Bloomington and Monroe County have the highest attraction rated nationally for business expansion and in location. Now, as far as the land use plan and how that affects rights, you as a developer, you know, you're trying to make a profit. You want to buy land cheap. You want to get it rezoned. You want to build a bunch of houses and sell them off and make your profit. But your profit isn't going back into offsetting costs like police, fire, parks, and all the other infrastructure, road infrastructure, taking care of roads, and the schools that is required. So trying to say that we should allow urban sprawl to take over a county and trying to say that we should look like Greenwood so that our school systems can have more money is just a false economy.
Say that you would like for more communities to resemble Greenwood, and also what do you think about his idea that development doesn't necessarily yield more money, more revenue to the county? Ultimately, I want to get this back to the state
but
senate.
I
want to give him an opportunity to respond to what you said, and then you can proceed.
Thank you, Ryan. Greenwood has never come out of my mouth. I've never advocated.
What's the outcome of your proposal?
Mark,
please
don't interrupt me. Please don't interrupt. Please. I've never made that comparison. One of the things about our community is that it's our community and it has its unique characteristics and resources. And so we want to grow that. We want to prosper that. Prosper from that. Again, I said I could spell it out. Well, if you have you referenced 100 new students, okay? Well, 100 new students means there's potentially maybe 50 or more families that have chosen to move into an area. Therefore, funding follows per student headcount, Mark. So if those students come, funding follows. If expansion needs to come in the form of infrastructure, classroom size, additional teachers, that funding follows the students. Bipartisan, I'd like to think government sometimes does a few things correct. Hopefully we've got it close to right there, that our education dollars should follow our students and our children. So I wanted to spell that out. So it's very simple. If you can't expand or grow, and we're not talking about developers, we're talking about families. That want to move in here, and maybe because
our it's a plan for building lots out in the
because
rural
our community is terrific and unique, and we have our resources right and our rural character here in southern Indiana. It makes it an opportune place to live and work and raise a family. Well, if you can't build homes and you can't expand into the rural area, and you mentioned Ellettsville, I've had officials approach me on teachers, parents, countless people in that area have said, please do something. Please help us. This stifles our community. And the way that you kill a community, Mark, is you take away their school. If you take away a school, that's the quickest way to kill a community. You mentioned poverty earlier and the $32,000 level. Well, this land use plan, that's the quickest way because it will kill our schools short and long term. And you take a school out of our community and folks are going to be forced to poverty standard wages and living. So
let's get Mark's opinion, then I want to move away from the land use plan because it's not as relevant to the state senate race as some of the other issues. So just a quick response from you, and then we can move on to other issues.
Okay, let's talk about Ellettsville first. Ellettsville is a town in Monroe County that hasn't made the connection between how expanding your growth causes your taxes to go up. And Ellettsville's tax rate is the highest in Monroe County. And it's because of that. There are very few controls on growth. Reed is advocating a rollback of regulations for growth. There is no prohibition in our Monroe County Comprehensive Plan for building homes on lots in rural areas. What it does is it restricts these large cookie-cutter subdivisions that require so much infrastructure and services out far away from where we already provide them. So it's more expensive. The schools, the money, the per pupil amount for schools goes to taking care of that individual school. It doesn't go towards overhead. It doesn't go towards capital. Capital fund is generated differently. And schools, to build a new school to take care of it. I mentioned 100, but it could easily be 1,000 new students in an area that has to be served.
Over $4,000 a student.
No, because now schools are not allowed to bond for new infrastructure. They have to have a referendum that passes in an election.
Well, and that's to your point. Yes.
And that's
municipalities do have the option to raise taxes. Mentioned that.
Monroe County is the only.
Ellettsville just any county can exercise that. Any municipality.
They can. They've all tried because they've been absolutely, with the funding cuts, schools are knocked to the ground. And
that's
all across Indiana, Monroe County passed their referendum because we support our schools here. But every other referendum in the state, except for, I think, Hamilton County, did not pass a resolution. So those are schools
that
are...
That's their choice, though, Mark.
It is a choice. It is certainly the choice of taxpayers to pay more to expand their schools.
Let's move on to other issues. I'd like to talk a little bit about...
But there is a radical...
Let's talk about health care.
But there is one thing. Reed has a radical proposal of a state senator working with a legislative committee to override a local planning document. That's almost unheard of. And I believe he could try it, and maybe with the Republican majority in the state legislature, he could do it. He could say, no, Monroe County, we don't care if you are worried about agricultural land or preserving green space or preserving environmentally sensitive areas. We're going to say that you can develop out.
I'm
proud from Indiana University. I went to the School of Public Environmental Affairs. I care about our environment. I went to every House Science Committee hearing on the Kyoto Treaty, specific to global warming, et cetera. And so that is not true about a radical proposal. It's about individuals and property owners having what is afforded in our state constitution and in our United States Constitution. That are rights, Mark. Consider property rights in this case. Consider, Ryan, in this county right now, if any grandparent is listening and you have, say, 100 acres, right? And it's in your will and testament that you have 4 grandchildren and you would like to leave 25 acres to each. You cannot do that. You have taken away that right. You can divide.
True. It's not true.
You can petition for it.
No. Let's move on.
Let me just finish that and then I'll
wrap it up, please. Yeah,
you can divide your plot into 2 parcels. Only 75-25 rule, so that 100 acres would be 75-25, and you can only apply to rezone it one time and one time only. And if it doesn't fall on a 15% slope, meaning we're in rural Indiana, right? Southern Indiana, we live with hills, and that's a great thing. That's our character. You can't build if you have a piece of property. It won't even be considered if there is a 15% or greater slope. That's a handicap access ramp.
Now,
to everyone listening and watching.
I'm sorry, but everything Reed has just said is absolutely false. And I'm not sure he's even read the plan.
People could verify very easily from the Monroe County website.
Let's move on to healthcare.
You're a healthcare professional. Mark was talking about expanding Medicare within the state. Medicaid. What are some of the ways in which you think, from what you've observed firsthand as a healthcare professional, what are some ways in which you think very quickly. I want to move to Mark after this and then do closing statements. But what are some ways which you think healthcare can be improved within the scope of what things that the state Senate can do?
Right. Absolutely. Well, first thing that needs to happen is it needs to pay for itself. So as implemented right now, and as we move forward, the new legislation, the Affordable Care Act, otherwise Obamacare, it only pays for half of its tenure, which is 10 years. It only provides taxes to pay for it for 5 years. Doesn't even begin to pay for itself. Now, as it pertains to Medicaid, this has been settled, meaning the Supreme Court ruled on whether the Affordable Care Act is constitutional or not. In this case, they ruled that it is constitutional because they classified it as a tax, which it wasn't passed in that intention, but that's interesting. We can have another discussion there. They also said, though, they did, per the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution, they did say to states, okay, you have elections. This is a recourse. You can elect people that will, do away with it, for lack of a better term, or continue it. What you can't do is take away Medicaid and the state rights, and respectively here in Indiana, on how to implement our Medicaid program with federal and state dollars. And so that's settled law. Each state has, per the 10th Amendment and the Supreme Court ruling, the ability to say yes or no.
What would you say?
And it has not been, to my knowledge, it's going to be pending. It's something very important that's going to be pending right
we
now.
We have to decide whether to accept a Medicaid expansion in Indiana or deny it.
On face, Mark, we can't even get to talking about what's most important, and that is taking care of patients and our loved ones, because it doesn't pay for itself. So if something doesn't pay for itself, I'm absolutely not going to vote for it, because the services won't be rendered, in this case, providing health care to people that are on Medicaid and need the care.
Right. So Medicaid expansion, basically the government provides 100% for the first 5 years and then 90% after that. So the federal government is covering that increase in the Medicaid expansion. And what that will do is actually save Indiana $1 billion every year. So the Republicans in states that wanted not accept the Medicaid expansion or saying, oh, it's going to cost us $2 billion after 10 years. Yeah, it'll cost you $2 billion, but it'll also save you $1 billion every year. So that's totally you're saving $8 billion. And what that does is actually give Medicaid coverage to a broad chunk of the population that can't get health care anyway, any other way. And these are seniors, these are people with disabilities, and Indiana has a terrible reputation for Medicaid and what the hoops people have to jump through to get it. But there's a couple of things, I've talked about healthcare coverage a lot over this campaign. There are things that haven't been discussed. We haven't discussed the civil rights issue with the state legislature. We're going to be considering legislation that we're discussing women's reproductive rights in Indiana. Do you support abortion? Do you support funding for Planned Parenthood? We're going to be talking about the Republicans in the state legislature trying to get the Constitution changed to say that same-sex marriage is not allowed in Indiana, which is changing our Constitution to enact discrimination.
Let's incorporate that into your final remarks, and then I will give my time for the answers.
There is immigration policy, which basically says, if you look like you're from Mexico, doesn't matter if you're a citizen or not, we're going to say it's okay for police to ask you for your papers, like some fascist country, just because you look Latino, and if you don't have your papers, you can be arrested. So that which violates probable cause, which is a constitutional right. So the teabag party actually gets these candidates in. They're talking about fiscal responsibility, but then they turn all of their attention to these relatively far right social issues. And like I said, we've had 2 years of Republican majority in the state legislature with no jobs bill, and so. yes, you know, I'd like to know what direction you'll take on these key issues: women's reproductive rights and funding for Planned Parenthood, same-sex marriage, immigration policy.
All right, Mark, we'll use that as your final remarks.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to Katz. And Ryan, I have two daughters, a wife, I think it's very disrespectful to throw out some term like teabag.
I meant tea party. Did I say teabag?
Thank you. What's important, and if we had more time, I would absolutely discuss more issues. But if this is for final remarks, Mark, I just want to reaffirm the commitment to this, to folks here, students that are watching. Born and raised here, I went to Indiana University. I live here, I work here. I want our community to thrive. I want our schools to thrive and funding to be there for our children. I also want companies to locate here so that when students graduate from IU or Ivy Tech, they can put their skill sets back into this community. And so I want to help be a help and not an obstacle, as government can be, in trying to partner with commerce and advocate what makes our community unique and to its character is our resources with higher education and all of our character here in this county. It's a beautiful place to live. And I would only want to be a steward of the environment and building our character here so that our children can in turn come back here, if they move away like I did for a decade, come back here, marry, and raise a family. And I hope to be a voice for those people and students that want to locate here, potentially back here one day. To those folks who are in the county, this year is very important. If you haven't voted, please vote. There needs to be some checks and balance in any community. And we haven't had it here in Monroe County for a long time. And this is a state Senate seat. It's important. One of us is going to represent you in Indianapolis. So please consider voting if you haven't already or you weren't going to vote. It's very important. We are at the doorstep of a lot of potential here. And we can do a lot of good things for our community and have a lot of wins. Anyone that wants to know where I'm at on issues can go to my website, readdallas.com, or Facebook. Again, I want to ask for everyone's consideration in their vote, whether you vote today or you vote on Election Day. So thank you for this opportunity, and God bless.
That was a very extended closing comment. I think my questions didn't take nearly as long. So do you have extra time?
No, we don't. That's about all the time we have. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. Reed Dallas, Republican challenger. Democrat Mark Stoops, thank you for joining us for this District 40 State Senate Candidate Forum.
Thank you.
The District 40 Candidate Forum is a joint production of Community Access Television Services and Community Radio WFHB. You can find these and other forums at katztv.net as well as wfhb.org/news. For Katz and WFHB, I'm Ryan Dawes.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.